Hey, everybody. Time for the movie retrospective. Going back to the late 1990s and doing another Stephen King adaptation. I say another Stephen King adaptation because earlier this week we talked about A Return to Salem's Lot, which technically was not a Stephen King adaptation, and that was awful. But this one is good. This is one of the good Stephen King adaptations.
This sucker holds up, man.
It really does.
It holds up. I think it's aged well. I think it's better now than it was. I mean, because they don't seem to really make movies like this anymore. It's good. Real good. Got really good acting. Great story. It's a period piece. They take you back to 1935 Louisiana in the prison system. It's real good. Paranormal. Yeah, it's aged super well.
Yeah, definitely one of the best Stephen King adaptations. And I kind of feel like, I think I saw this in the theater when it first came out back in 1999. And I maybe saw it one more time after that subsequently, but I hadn't seen it for like a really long time, probably like 15, 20 years. So I was really excited to watch. I had forgotten that the thing is 3 hours long. It's 3 hours long, but it doesn't seem like it to me. It
goes by fast.
It was kind of spellbinding, I thought.
It also, the movie kind of plays out the way a good Stephen King book is written, and it's kind of rare. Usually the movies and the books don't translate well. I've never read this book, but I've read a lot of Stephen King's, and this movie plays out kind of like a Stephen King book. It feels like a Stephen King book without some of the hokey dialogue, because sometimes some of his books have internal dialogue that's a little bit crazy, but You do get a really good Stephen King experience with it.
Yeah, it's really kind of like, well, it's interesting because, I mean, obviously this was written for the screen and directed by Frank Darabont, who really seems to have a good track record of adapting Stephen King things. He did The Mist, and obviously he did the Shawshank Redemption, which was amazing, like a few years before this one, which was also set in a prison, weirdly.
Yeah.
But that was actually an adaptation of a short story. The Green Mile was kind of an interesting experiment that Stephen King did. I actually didn't read it until a little bit later when it came out, like, in one book form. But when he first published it, he wanted to experiment with publishing the way they used to publish books back in the old days, like back in the Victorian era, where they'd publish, like, a chapter a month or something like that, or not necessarily a chapter, but, like, a chunk of the book every month. So this book originally was published as six short books, like over a 6 month period. That, I mean, they weren't that short, obviously, because the final book is like really long. But he said that he wanted to experiment with that because it used to piss him off, like people that jumped to the end of the stories, like especially when they were reading mysteries or something. He said, my mom used to do that. She used to get like an Agatha Christie book and then she'd be reading in the middle and then she'd skip to the end and that used to drive me crazy. Like she was checking to see how it ended. And he's like, so I wanted to do like an old school, only a little bit of it coming out at a time. And he's like, really, I didn't know how it was going to end either, because Stephen King very famously doesn't outline anything ahead of time. He just kind of like gets an idea and runs with it. So this actually came out over a 6 month period, like in pieces, like in six short kind of books. And then later on, I think I don't think I read the book until maybe after I saw the movie, because I think they put out like a big novelization of it, like after the movie came out. But this is it's a very, very faithful adaptation, at least from what I remember of the story. They really did keep, and the thing too about the fact that it was serialized to start with, he very specifically, because he knew that it was going to be coming out in six, like shorter six book, you know, increments, that each of those books was going to be part of the larger narrative, but it was also kind of its own story as well. And the movie kind of plays out like that too. And I think that's I think that's one of the things that makes it so good. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's kind of like, I don't want to say it's like six completely different stories, because it's not. It's all one big story, but there's parts of it that are like focused on different things, but they all kind of like feed into the larger narrative, and I think it worked out really well.
Yeah, it's a good book. It's about this guy he's an old guy, and he's in a convalescent home, and he's going out, and he's doing something mysterious out in the woods, and he tells this woman that's in the home with him his life story about how long time ago, back in the 30s, He was a prison guard on death row in Louisiana, and he comes across this death row inmate who has miraculous abilities. All right. He can heal sickness. He can even bring back the dead. And it's mind-blowing. And he's ended up on death row. And a bunch of other stuff happens around this guy. Little side missions and stuff. And it turns out that this guy is wrongly accused. He didn't do what he was... They accused him of raping and murdering these little girls. That's not... That didn't happen. He was trying to bring them back to life.
Yeah.
And the dude that really did it is on death row in there with him.
Yeah, he comes later. Yeah. Played by Sam Rockwell. I totally forgot Sam Rockwell was in this, you guys.
So this prison guard is like stuck between a rock and a hard place. Because he's come face to face with one of God's miracles. All right?
Yeah.
And he's being ordered to... Put this dude in the electric chair. And what's he going to do? He says, at the end, he's like, what am I going to do on judgment day when I stand before God and tell him that I'd killed one of his miracles in the electric chair, knowing that he was innocent? And it's what I'm going to tell him. It was my job. So he was going to let him go, wanted to let him go. And this dude is such an innocent soul. He's so good. He's like, he gives up his own life. He's like, no, don't let me go. They'll ruin you behind it. And really, overall, when you look at the story is very Christian. It's a lot of times on the show, we'll bag on Christian movies because the Christians just cannot write Christian mythology. It's very rare there's a good Christian movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Very rare. Noah, I thought, was great. That's Jewish and Christian. And then the one with the guy who was killing the demons. What was the name of that?
Frailty.
That was a great...
Another good Christian movie.
Really good Christian movie.
Where the Christians turned out to be correct.
All right. Christians just can't write. I don't know what it is. They just fucking can't write.
Well, believers, they just... Like, real strict believers can't.
They're too strict with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's the problem.
This is actually, when you really look into it, is a retelling of a gospel story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's about a man wrongly accused facing execution. And one of his executors becomes a believer. And then in the end is cursed with immortality, which that happens to this guy. He becomes immortal.
Yeah, well, functionally immortal. Not really sure how long he's going to live.
Now, that's in Christian mythology also, where one of the guys who caught the blood of Jesus' blood on the cross, he became immortal. Or was it the Roman soldier that helped... that stuck the spear in him, or was it the one that carried the cross for him on the way? I think it's told a little bit different each time, but one of those Roman soldiers becomes cursed/blessed with immortality, and he's got to go throughout life giving his testimony as his witness towards the sacrifice. And this is the exact same retelling of that, but it's done Stephen King style in Louisiana in the 30s. And it's just... really, really well written. Real well written.
It is, yeah.
And it addresses pretty much all the tenets of Christian mythologies, the morality tales that the mythologies confront, you know, in the Gospels. Also other stuff that it's outside, extra canonical stuff, it's like that. It's just within... I guess you could say it's a Christian story, but it's not in the Bible, of course. This is extra canonical. This is mythology, but it's real good. Fits right there with the Christian ethos. But it's not, doesn't hit you in the gut with it. You have to understand Christianity to see it. It's a retelling of that.
And good. I mean, I think the great thing about this too is that even though I guess like the heart of the story is, you know, John Coffey, you know, the guy who's kind of like the magical dude.
Yeah, he's this huge black guy. His motherfucker's jacked. And he looks scary as hell. He's got to be 6'7", probably.
He's 6'5", I looked it up.
And he's just got scars all over him. And they think he's mentally handicapped, but he's not. I don't think he is. He's just extremely good-tempered and innocent. And he comes across childlike. But I think his intelligence is normal. They don't know where he came from. It's like they said, it's as he just dropped out of the sky.
Yeah.
And he's, when he does talk, he just talks about the suffering of the world and how unjust this is and how people killing each other. It's just a real good movie. They never really tell you who he is. He's, I guess he's the gift from God.
Yeah, he's like an enigmatic character.
Yeah, right.
Well, the thing is, they kind of, I think in Prince modern paranormal parlance, they would call him an empath.
An empath. He does. He has a lot of psychic abilities.
Because he can feel other people's suffering.
Yeah.
And kind of, I guess he can, like, feel other people's emotions. I don't know if he can necessarily, like, read their thoughts necessarily.
He can put it in you, too.
Yeah, he can do that as well.
He can show you what he sees or what happened. And he can do a lot of stuff. He can lay on hands. He can resurrect the dead.
Yeah, to a degree.
To a degree.
Because I think that, well, the thing that got
he
him in trouble...
bring a mouse back.
The thing that got him in trouble at the beginning was that, like, you know, he got accused of raping and killing those two little girls. But, you know, you kind of find out later that he was actually trying to bring him back, but it was too late. So he kept saying this, like, I tried to take it back, but it was too late. And they thought that he meant he tried to take back killing them, but he actually tried to take it back, take death back from them, but it was too late. He didn't get to them in time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the thing. So he can, like, resurrect the dead, but only, like, at, you know, within a certain time frame, I guess.
Yeah. But, and it damages him. Then he spits out these things that look like flies that vanish.
Yeah, so it's always, like he's sucking the evil out and then expelling it.
And I guess that's why he's got scars all over him. It leaves scars. He can't remember much either.
Yeah, because it seems like he's like a figure that's almost kind of like suffering for it. He's like a very, like, Jesus type of figure where he's just like, he's put there to, like, take on the burdens and the suffering of, like, everybody on earth. You know what I mean?
Even though if you actually go through the Gospels, there are three or four different Jesuses being described, depending on the author of who's writing the gospel. But he's one of them.
I mean, the popular conception,
the self-sacrificing Jesus.
Yeah, it definitely comes across like that.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is that even though his story is kind of like the heart of the narrative, I guess because this was serialized to start with, it actually goes way into, like, a bunch of other stories and a bunch of other characters, and I really, really like that. It's almost kind of like this tapestry of all of these other characters, like, in these, the death row, like, the other guards and the other prisoners and, like, what their deal is. And by the way, one of them just happens to have magical powers that, like, sometimes plays into the plot. But then it all kind of, like, works together. Like you said, it's really, really well written. I remember really liking the book when I read it as well. So I think all of that was kind of there for the taking. And from what I remember, like I said, this is a very, very faithful adaptation. I kind of feel like they didn't really leave all that much out. But yeah, like, all the stuff with, like, the crazy prisoner, like, played by Sam Rockwell, who's just kind of, like, totally going ape shit, like, all the time. They got, like, a whole thing with him, and then they got the whole thing with the Cajun guy, with the mouse, Mr. Jingles.
Yeah.
They got all that. Then you got, like, all the interior strife with the guards and that one, like, little pipsqueaky asshole guard that's, like, the fucking worst. And he's been put like on this position because his aunt is important.
She's like an elected official.
Right. She's some elected official or is married to somebody important or something like that. And he's kind of like a sadist and he seems like he wants to be like, you know,
he wants to execute people
because he gets off on it. And he just seems like he wants to make everyone's life as miserable as possible. Like
he's trying to be important.
Yeah.
Real Mr. Tough Guy.
So he's easily, like, the villain of the piece. Yeah. I do kind of feel like a lot of the other guards are just...
Well, the other guards are just cool,
and they're doing their jobs. They don't like it. You know, they get upset when they, you know, they kind of get attached to the prisoners, even though something, you know, some of them obviously did do bad shit, like,
back
in the day.
Their job is to keep them calm.
Right.
And they're respectful to them. They say, you know, after they die, they've paid their debt. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of stuff, you know.
Yeah, there's no reason to make any shit, like, any more miserable than it has to be. Like, we're already going to kill them, and they are already being punished, so there's no reason to, like, make things even worse. But that one particular guard, Percy Wetmore is his name, which, like, that's, like, the perfect name, I guess. But, yeah, he's basically, like, the big villain. Everybody else is, like, pretty okay. And well, obviously, like, the crazy guy played by Sam Rockwell, he's, like, turns out to be the bad guy, because it turns out, spoiler alert, that he's actually the person that raped and killed those two girls that John Coffey got accused of killing.
Yeah, and then they show the scene when they come to Coffey's execution. The family of the little girls are sitting there hating on him. He's, I feel them hating me. And it's kind of fucking sucks because you're going, that would be really bad because he's innocent. He didn't do it.
He didn't do it.
And it was the dude that did do it was already dead, but it was the dude that the dad of the little girls had hired to paint the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the main prison guard knew who it was, but couldn't say anything.
Yeah.
He couldn't say, you know, he could say it wasn't this dude. It was that dude that you hired.
That you hired, yeah.
Yeah. So they didn't even tell him, I guess, because it would have made it worse on that family, I guess.
Well, that's what they were kind of saying. Like, they didn't really say anything about the family, but they did say about Hal, who was that actor. Who's that actor? Like, James Cromwell is his last name, I think. The guy that kind of played the head of the prison or the warden or whatever. And they said that, well, they're like, well, now that we know that John Coffey is innocent because he's took Tom Hanks's hand and he, like, showed him what actually happened. And he's like, well, we know he's innocent. And they were like, well, if Hal can't do anything, like the warden, if he can't do anything, like if he can't exonerate him, if he doesn't have that power to do that, then just don't tell him, because it's like, it's right. bad enough we all have to live with this guilt.
Yeah.
We don't want to, like, more people have to live with it too. And like I said, he has like a big discussion with John Coffey, like, you know, what do you want me to do? You want me to leave the door open? I'll let you out. He's like, I know you didn't do it.
They'd just catch him again anyway.
That's what he figured. And honestly, he said it's okay. He's like, you know, because like I said, because he was an empath, he was just kind of like, I'm tired. Like, his whole entire life, all he feels is like the suffering and pain of other people. And he even says like, it's like shards of glass in my brain or something like that. And so he just doesn't want to feel that anymore, and he's just kind of tired of the world being the way it is, so he just wants to check out.
Jane,
you know,
referred
to
it as magic. It's not magic, it's psychic abilities slash spiritual abilities, which is one and the same thing if you ask me. But it's not magic. He's an empath. He has the ability to make you see what he feels if he touches you. He can lay hands on some person and heal them. He can resurrect the dead to a limited amount. And he also can feel people's pain from a long ways away too. Remember, he could feel what the other
yeah,
guy being
because,
executed.
Yeah, because when Delacroix got executed,
he
when,
felt it, yeah.
Holy shit, that was one of the most horrifying fucking scenes ever.
Right.
Oh my God. Because it's like, do they ever say, like, what Delacroix did, like, to get on death row? I don't think they ever say.
They never said what the other guy did either, the Indian guy.
Oh yeah, that's right.
The guy
played by Graham Greene.
They just want you to judge them for how they are, not what they did.
Not what they did, yeah. So you're just seeing Delacroix, like, you know, however long he's been on death row, and you're just seeing him as kind of like this doddering, like, nice little old Cajun man who's, you know, who has this little mouse he's always playing with and everything, and you know he's gonna die. And like I said, all the guards are really attached to him and stuff, and they never really tell you, like, what he did. Like, it's implied
it must have been some kind of homosexual murderer or something, because that one guard kept just, you know, slandering him as being gay.
Yeah, either that or
like that.
Either that or that was just like something because he knew that would, like, piss him off. I don't really know, but so it could have been that. But and
some
like
kind
I said,
of homosexual murder.
When they bring him in to, you know, get killed and everything like that, it's like, shit. That's like really upsetting too, because he just seemed like such a cool character. And you can, like,
train the mouse
and everything, and like all the guards are like really upset, and then the whole shit happens with that stupid little fucknut, like that Percy guy, saying, oh, I want to be in the front in the execution. And he was mad at Delacroix because you know, they call him Del for short, because Del had kind of like, well, hadn't like the crazy guy, like, grabbed Percy, like Sam Rockwell's character, and then like that he wet his pants, and Del was like making fun of him about it.
Yeah.
So he just was trying to get back at him, and plus he was, you know, he stomped on his mouse at some point too, but
yeah,
which that really upset me. But John Coffey brings the mouse back.
Yeah, Coffey brings it back,
and it's still alive.
Yeah.
In the modern day, like, he's still got the mouse. Yeah.
It became immortal, too.
Because I'm sitting there going, shit, man, how long? Because that's what the old guy was saying at the end, like old, you know, old Tom Hanks character is just kind of like, well, if the mouse
is still alive
yeah. and that was like in 1935 and what, mice live, what, like 2 years,
maybe?
And it's still alive, like in presumably 1999 or whatever the hell year it was supposed to be.
Right.
And he's like, well, shit, man, I'm 108 now. Like, how long am I going to live? Like, he might live forever.
It was a retelling of that eternal Roman soldier.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. But it was that, I mean, so that whole scene where, you know, where Percy, like, is just, like, getting back at Del, he's like, I'm not even going to wet the sponge on the electric chair, so he'll just sit there and cook, and, like, he'll still be alive, and it was, like, fucking horrifying. And then it was so horrifying that, because I'm sitting there looking at Percy, go, what the fuck did you think was going to happen, you little twerp? You know what I mean? Because it's like, he looks at it at first, like, yeah, fry, motherfucker, and then, like, he's just like, oh my god, this is, like, way worse than that. And then he turned away, and then Tom Hanks is like, you look at it, like, you're the one that did that, you know what I mean? So it was even, like, too much for him, and then they make him clean it up and everything. So I really liked when that guy got, like, fucking punched, and they were all just kind of like...
Coffee punished him, though. He brought justice to him.
He did, yeah. That's like, that was probably like the best way to go about that, because like we said, it was kind of like killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil that in case you guys haven't seen it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like a lot of people have seen this because, you know, it came out a long time ago, and a lot of people have read the book as well. But yeah, this is definitely one of the best Stephen King adaptations. I don't think it's quite as revered as Shawshank Redemption, but when this came out, it was nominated for 4 Oscars. So, including Best Picture. It didn't win, but it was nominated.
It's a top-notch movie.
It really is. It's definitely one of the best adaptations. And I was going to say, too, I was going to say about poor Michael Clarke Duncan, who played John Coffey. He was actually, he actually started out as, like, not surprisingly, because he's fucking gigantic, but he started out as, like, a bodyguard.
Yeah.
And a club bouncer and stuff. I think he worked for the Notorious B.I.G.
Okay.
And when that guy got shot, when Notorious B.I.G. got shot, he's like, yeah, I don't want to really do this anymore. So he was in acting. So I think he was in, I feel like he was in some action movies. What was he in? Con Air? I think he was maybe in Con Air.
I haven't seen it.
And he's been like with Nicolas Cage, and he's been in some other movies, but this was his first big role. And I think, oh, he was in Armageddon. And Bruce Willis, who was also in Armageddon, like, when he heard about this movie, he said, you have to put this guy in the movie, even though he'd only been, like, in a couple movies, like, in small roles.
He does a great job.
Before that, and he's amazing in this. Yeah. He's so, so good.
He can cry on command. And
he's
he can
so
make
good.
You, motherfucker can make you cry.
This is, God, this movie's so sad.
Yeah.
This movie's so sad.
Yeah.
It's like the, it's like... Honestly, like, I remember, like I said, I saw it in the theater, and I was like, God, that was the fucking, one of the saddest fucking movies I've ever seen. It's terribly, terribly sad. And it's, like, it's not only sad when, like, Del gets it, because that's fucked up, but then, like, you know, when John Coffey gets executed at the end, too, it's just like, oh my God, it's awful. And, like, all the other guards are, like, standing there crying and shit like that. It's terrible. It's like, so, you know, have the tissues, Andy, like, when you're watching this one. But, you know, what I was gonna say is that the people that were up for that role first... which I just don't think this would have worked at all. Ving Rhames, who maybe could have pulled it off. I love Ving Rhames, but...
Not big enough.
Well, the thing about it is John Coffey, in the book, he was 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
In the movie, he's really only 6'5", but they...
Huge.
Well, they did a lot of... He's not actually as big. Yeah, he's not actually as big as they show him in the movie.
6'5 is huge, though.
It is big. But the thing about it is that some of the other actors, like Cromwell and stuff like that, were almost as tall as that. Yeah. So they had to, like, shoot him
from different angles
and stuff like that to make him look, like, way, way bigger. And I think they also, like, made the, you know, the bed in his prison cell, they made that, like, smaller than an actual bed.
Yeah.
And the electric chair, they made that smaller than an actual electric chair, just to make him look like he was big, giant.
Yeah.
Because that's in the book, like I said, he's this big 7 foot tall. But yeah, they said Ving Rhames, or you're gonna laugh, Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah,
which
doesn't have enough mass.
Well, Shaquille O'Neal
is pretty big.
I'm just talking about, like, not even from the physicality standpoint, because they can shoot around that. Shaquille O'Neal would not have been able to do this role.
No, this dude's biceps are the size of bowling balls. Okay, he's got huge fucking biceps. He's huge.
But what I was saying that is that even if they had a big guy that could do it. But Shaquille O'Neal is not an actor. He's not, like, a great actor. And this role, there's a lot of like real emotionally wrenching kind of shit that you had to do for this role, and I just cannot see Shaquille O'Neal pulling that off.
No.
So I'm really, really glad.
Well, not only just the acting, it's just the intimidation factor, how big this dude is. What's his name?
Michael Clark Duncan.
Michael Duncan.
He's huge. He passed away, sadly.
Did he?
In 2012, he had a heart attack. Only 54 years old.
He weighed a lot.
Yeah.
The human heart can only do so much.
Yeah.
Look, that's not natural, okay? That's anabolics. And when you have a frame that big and you pile that much muscle onto it, that's a lot of stress on your heart. Little dudes like me can get away with it because it's not as much meat, you know, to power. Our hearts are all about the same size. But he's impressive, super impressive. Literally, his biceps are the size of bowling balls. And it's a huge frame. It's fucking lats and everything. You know, I'm into that shit. I can fucking judge how, but he's huge. That dude's very strong.
But I think that was what was so cool, and I think that that's about his character, and I think that's something that Stephen King had in mind when he was writing the character, as you wanted him to be like a gentle giant type of thing, where he looked super scary and super intimidating, but he was just like the sweetest, gentlest, kindest person ever.
He's a godlike soul.
Yeah.
He's almost angelic.
And I mean,
that's what they're trying to portray him basically as an angel.
Yeah. And he killed it. I mean, he was great in this. He was great in this.
Yeah.
For, like I said, for having only been in like a few minor, you know, parts up to then. So thanks to Bruce Willis for recommending him for this movie, because he was he fucking
spot on.
He killed it. And the funny thing too is that Tom Hanks, I think, was not actually the original choice for this. I think it was John Travolta was who they asked, which again, I don't think that would have worked.
I'm not a big fan of Tom Hanks, but he's fucking awesome in this. Awesome.
He's actually awesome. Perfectly cast
this
in this.
This is one of his best roles.
He's perfectly cast in this.
Castaway is good too, but this is his best role, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is that I think that you really...
He's real likable.
Yeah, you really needed somebody... And like all the characters that played guards, other than the one asshole one who is supposed to be an asshole, I think they got really good actors for all of these because, you know, you're inclined to maybe not be as charitable toward these characters because it's like, you know, they work on death row and blah, blah, blah. But the fact that they made them all just nice guys, guys.
All the guards were cool, including their boss. He was cool, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It was just that one little fucker.
Yeah, that one little fucker. And it's just like every time, and I know this is terrible, and I know the movie's like manipulating my emotions and stuff, but every single time like that dude got punched or they put him in the straitjacket and threw him in the thing, I was like, yeah, fuck that dude. It's like, God damn it, that fucking asshole. And it's just like, I liked when they had, because the thing about it is that even though, you know, Tom Hanks, everybody, like all the other guards, they were all really, really likable characters. But even the most saintly person, if you had to put up with that little fuck face all the time, like every single day of your life, you'd want to beat the shit out of him too. And I don't think anybody would blame you, like acting the way that dude acted.
They handled it in the right way.
I think they handled it exactly right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they smacked him around and stuff but he needed it.
That dude should not have been a guard.
No, he should not at all.
He should have been an inmate. That's
because that dude was fucking.
He's a maniac.
Uh huh.
And that's eventually what happens to him. He becomes an inmate
at a mental hospital.
Yeah.
The one that he was supposed to go and like work at as like a cushy new job. He just wanted to see an execution first because he was a fucking sadist.
Yeah.
But
well, among a lot of other things, he was trying to be as important as he could, trying to be as big and bad as he could.
But he was a weaselly little coward.
Yeah, but he was
coward.
A weaselly little fucker, and he only attacked basically the helpless, which were these inmates.
Yeah.
These inmates are helpless.
Yeah.
And then the inmates that were a threat, he was terrified of them.
Yep.
He only would pick on inmates that were helpless.
Yep.
So that's the lowest of the low.
Yeah. So, yeah, he really needed this fucking...
Inmates that were badasses? Oh, no, he was scared of them. He couldn't even attack an inmate who was a badass inmate who was attacking one of his buddies.
Yeah.
Another guard. He didn't step forward and
fucking bash him. Yeah, he just stood there, like, terrified.
He didn't... There's just so little a man in him, you know. He couldn't even save one of his partners. He was too scared.
Yeah. So, like you said, he was always picking on people
that were weak.
Like, weaker than him. Like, yeah. And like I said, stepping on that mouse and stuff. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah. Just for that,
yep.
You should get your ass kicked. I'm just saying. But yeah, so honestly, if you haven't seen The Green Mile in a while, I would really suggest, like, revisiting it, because I forgot. I remember it being really good and remember really liking it, like, when I saw it in the theater and then went again. But watching it again, I was like, man, I forgot how fucking good this movie is. It's so good. And it's like I said, it's very, very long. We watched it on HBO Max. I'm sure it's somewhere else. It's really long. It's 3 hours, but it totally did not seem it. I was just like mesmerized the whole time. I got so into all the characters. All the acting is just impeccable. And it's just, I mean, it's sad and it's like, but there's kind of funny stuff and it's like, it's really touching and heartbreaking. It's just, I don't know. It's great. I just really, really liked it. I enjoyed it a lot. Like, I think this time more than, maybe even more than the first time.
It's just aged real well in a world of fucking shitty movies. This one's kind of fucking just remained a strong movie.
I mean, like I said, good. Frank Darabont, he's kind of the man. He's really kind of made some of the best Stephen King adaptations. And honestly, the best Stephen King adaptations that were, oh my God, the best Stephen King adaptations that were kind of more drama, you know what I mean? Because like I said, he made Shawshank Redemption, which easily one of the best movies of the 90s.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. I remember that one being good too.
Oh my God, that one was amazing. But this one is like right up there with it. And it's like, you know, I don't know if anything can be as good as Shawshank Redemption, because Shawshank Redemption was just like the fucking best. But this one is like pretty, this is almost as good. I kind of feel it.
I really was into the paranormal aspect of this.
I was as well. And like I said, I liked that it had that going on, but there was so much other stuff going on too. So it wasn't just focused on that one thing. It was almost kind of like this whole tapestry of this interrelated, like all of these other characters going on.
Yeah, there's a whole mosaic of morality tales going on.
Yeah.
And like I said, they're all basically from the Christian ethos. But that transfers into other religions and philosophies too. They're just kind of universal. Really, the best stuff that's in Christian ethos is just universal. It's just universal stuff.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the things that are in there have more to do with, some of the crazy shit that's in the Bible has more to do with religious purity, you know, ritual purity.
Yeah, which doesn't really apply to modern life in any way.
Don't touch
anyway.
That damn ark! Like, boom, oh, yeah, see? You touched it. Struck dead. There's no real morality tale behind that. Just don't do it. Don't disobey. Even if that shit's fallen, don't catch it. God's a hard ass.
Yeah.
You know? But that doesn't really teach much today, you know? But no, it's just a good, it's a good, good story. And for Christians or non-Christians alike would like this. It's just, you know, universal.
Yeah, morality. It's just like a really good, just kind of like good versus, I don't want to say like simplistic, it's not that, but it's like a pretty clear, like, these are good people and this is what happens, and then this guy's like clearly a bad person, and you know what I mean? But it kind of addresses how you know, bad shit happens to good people, like, all the time, too, because John Coffey...
And have mercy on bad people.
Yeah, that too. Which I kind of liked that, because...
And sometimes the so-called good people are the bad people. And then sometimes the so-called bad people are the good people. Like, Coffey was a bad guy from the point of view of society. But it was a lie. He wasn't bad. He was an angel.
Yeah. He was
and
just trying to help.
People were cursing him. Right, yeah.
And people were just, like, shitting to him.
Yeah, so it's that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, this is a great movie, easily one of the best Stephen King adaptations, and if you haven't seen it in a while, you should definitely go give it another look. Like I said, it's on HBO Max, maybe other places as well. So yeah, if you've seen it lately, or if you've seen it a long time ago and remember it, like, tell us about it in the comments, and that'll do it for this movie retrospective. We will see you guys again on the next one. Bye.